Live from the Regis Suite East office in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Understanding Autism. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, alongside Greg Isaac, the great producer. And he's shaking his head, but he is a great producer. And Kim Isaac, Paul Alden, all the way from Texas. Guys, how are you?
Doing pretty well.
Hot.
It is hot. It's a lot hotter than Houston.
It's about 15 degrees hotter here, I guess.
Wow. That's a lot. That's like Houston would be like Flagstaff right now.
If you say so.
Without the flag. Maybe the staff. Okay, but today's going to be a great show. We got a special edition. Usually we're on every second Monday and Tuesday. Due to technical difficulties, we are on 2 hours today, 2 to 3, and that's going to be autism and violence, rated R, probably.
No.
No. And then, of course, 3 to 4, we're going to have another show, Understanding Autism, and that's going to be on ADOS, which stands for?
We're going to talk about the ADOS. It's the Autism Diagnostic Observation Schedule, and we're going to talk about diagnostic measures and also just measuring progress and looking at how people are defining things in terms of progress.
Excellent.
It'll be exciting, yeah.
So today, however, autism and violence, and I think when you and I talked a little bit, it was certain media people have given attention and maybe have misspoken perhaps about people that may or may not have autism, and they're trying to imply that maybe they're part of certain possibilities in terms of crimes. And
yeah,
so
well, we've had some recent news. You know, there was some shootings at UCSB in California, and, you know, with the Elliot Rogers. Actually, is it Roger or Rogers? We've said it two different ways.
I think it's actually Roger, but I'm not sure.
No, I'm just realizing I have it two different. Anyway, but no, I mean, there's been sort of a, I guess maybe trend isn't the right word, but there seems to be a tendency for people when these, I mean, horrible things are happening, for, you know, people who maybe have the diagnosis of Asperger's or maybe not, to sort of pin everything on the Asperger's or the autism. And because in the community, you know, autism is very complex. Everybody's still, you know, learning about it. And on our show, we're really focused on, you know, teaching understanding. And so I think it's really important, or Paul and I both thought it was really important, to sort of clarify things for people in terms of looking at some of these, you know, crimes and this violence, and really breaking it down to looking at what is, you know, understanding autism, examining culture, and also realizing that there are many additional factors involved when a violent crime occurs with someone that may or may not have a diagnosis.
So do you have specific times that you've seen in the media where they have talked about a certain crime being committed, a violent crime, and then they pinned it somewhat on autism, someone on the spectrum?
Well, I mean, the most notable recently, obviously, is the Elliot Rogers shooting at UCSB. On top of that, there was suddenly, his name slips my mind.
Adam Lanza.
They mentioned that he might be on the spectrum as well. It's one of those things where when something this tragic and violent happens, people want an explanation. They sit there and the thought is, there's no way a normal person could do something like this. I couldn't do this, and I'm normal, so people like me couldn't do it. And so they're looking for an explanation. And so they're ready to sort of grasp onto anything. What happened with Elliot Rogers is that an attorney for the family came out and mentioned that he had Asperger's. And it came to light shortly after that that was a misspeak, that when he was younger, they thought he'd had it, but he'd never been formally diagnosed. And in years of therapy for various other things, he never received a diagnosis for autism or Asperger's. So that's the kind of thing that if you were working with a professional therapist for years, would probably get spotted. There's no guarantee, but it's pretty likely that the kind of struggles someone on the spectrum has would set off flags eventually. So the problem there is that most of the retraction did never get out, and so the first statement that he had Asperger's spread everywhere. With Adam Lanza, it's another case where he might have had autism, but if you've watched the scene when he first came into the courtroom after he was arrested, there was no way he was all there in terms of being present and understanding what was happening around him. That, you know, it could have been shock, but it could have very easily and probably likely be something else that maybe wasn't previously diagnosed. But the thing is that, you know, what we're going to talk about here is sort of how autism can relate to violence and the fact that autism is not likely to be a cause for violence, but also that these kinds of violences, we shouldn't necessarily immediately jump to saying violence is always associated with mental illness, because historically speaking, we've seen a lot of evidence that you can have violent people who do things that will shock us and horrify us from causes that are not mental illness related.
So why do you think the media uses autism as a catch-all? The laziness?
Not so much as a catch-all, it's just that, you know, they're looking for anything they can find. And so if autism wasn't there, maybe they would have found depression or some sort of manic condition or anything. Whatever he was seeing a therapist for, they want to jump to that because it's easier than having a discussion about deeper causes. And it's sort of doubtless that the Elliot Rodger shooting had much deeper causes in sort of cultural issues and a variety of things, that it's not as simple as there was something wrong in his head, and as long as we catch people with something wrong in their heads, no one will get shot. It's not as simple as that, but people want to find an answer.
And I think, too, I mean, people, you know, this is a scary thing when something like this happens, and people are already, when they don't understand something or don't relate to it, it's easy to have a negative spin on it, actually. And because, you know, yes, we have some autism awareness now, but we still don't have that understanding piece. And I think people in general may have some fear tendencies toward autism because they may not, you know, understand. And so I think it's kind of like the perfect storm of things, I think. And I think that's going to come up a lot in this hour that we talk about this. There's just, again, so many factors that really it's not accurate or fair to pin something on one particular issue. It is more of that perfect storm issue, you know, combination of different things. But I think people are using that, you know, Asperger's and autism, because I think there's already an element of uncertainty amongst the community. Is, okay, we know this autism is out there. We really don't understand it. We know it's there. Oh my gosh, is this what it is? You know, I think it's somewhat fear-based, in my opinion, too.
So you're an expert. You didn't give your background. Let's give your background, because I'm going to ask a question that I think will clear all this up. And number one, Kimberly Isaac, RDI, tell a little bit of background.
Kim Isaac Emery, and I'm an autism specialist and a certified RDI program consultant. I've been in the field for 17 years, and I'm a co-host of this radio show.
And I'm Paul Levin. I'm 31. I was diagnosed with autism 8 years ago. And since then, I've been studying it to improve my ability to advocate for those of us on the spectrum.
And the combination is just, you talk about a perfect storm. I call it about a perfect combination, sort of inside, outside, and together, just an amazing amount of great information, not misinformation, but right on the point. So the question is, because we got the panel of experts right here, right now, to clear this up, is that in all your vast experience, we'll start with you, Kim, have you ever, what have you seen, I mean, in terms of autism and violence? I mean, anyone, I guess, could be violent, any, you know, someone on the spectrum, off the spectrum, if they're pushed at a certain, to a certain degree. But what have you seen, generally speaking? Let's clear that up, first of all.
Okay, well, a couple of things. Generally speaking, first of all, I will say everybody is different. So just because this is my experience and I have been in the field for 17 years, I don't want this to come across as this is the final answer. This is my experience.
But it is your experience.
It is my experience. And actually, I've worked with many, many teens and adults on the spectrum. And what I found is, honestly, I haven't seen violent behavior in general. What I have seen at times is frustration and maybe some escalation of voices, tension, but I haven't experienced any violence, nor have the families of the people that I've worked with. Now, I have seen more, and maybe this is a definition issue, of some aggressive behavior behaviorally due to lack of being able to communicate. Sometimes individuals that are nonverbal on the spectrum, they have so much frustration that they communicate with their bodies or by, you know, trying to get someone's attention.
And so the distinction there is that it's not an intent to harm someone, but an intent
it's
to express something.
Exactly.
And that's perfect comment, because what came to my mind when I think of violent crimes I think of reactive, but also, more importantly, maybe premeditated. And that's a key word, isn't it?
And that's something that you see with all of these ones that people are talking about, is they are very much premeditated.
Exactly.
And we'll sort of get into the way that that sort of violence begins a little later.
Yeah, but no, but definitely. So you also hear, and I think a lot of these are definition issues where, you know, people will say and use the word aggressive a lot, like in schools and classrooms, oh, this child's aggressive. They label someone as aggressive. I personally see it differently. I see it as this person is frustrated. We need to provide another outlet for them to communicate. It's not fair to say, well, they're aggressive. Well, okay, I guess physically it's, you would see that and think that, but there's a definite reason for it. And so, anyway, in my experience, while I've seen some aggressive behavior, it's pretty much always had a very obvious, just out of frustration.
Keyword intent or intention.
Yeah,
not someone,
to hurt someone.
Exactly.
Because they're frustrated.
I think that's really important that listeners understand this, is that
you're
not saying that it can never happen, but
right.
I think it's somewhat unprofessional for media to assume, because then the second question, and we could get back right on to my first question, but the second question, how much damage does this do to the perception of the autism spectrum?
And that's the big thing, is that when people are afraid of autistic people, when you go on the Internet and you see comments on news articles saying, we should lock all the autistic people up to protect people. That you see comments saying, you know, autistic people are one step away from being sociopaths. That you see people who have a really deep lack of understanding of autism. And that teaches those with autism not to reveal it, not to seek help, not to try to address the challenges that they're facing, because they don't know which person they go to and talk to is going to be welcoming and which person they go to and talk to is suddenly going to be terrified of them or think that they should be in jail or otherwise, you know, lash out against them verbally or otherwise. That, you know, one thing that is known is that people with mental disabilities like autism are more likely to be the victims of abuse and crimes than to be the instigators. And with that already being the case, anything that creates additional prejudice against them is incredibly harmful. And there's not apparently a lot of concern for that in the news media, that even when they talk about autism being a link, they don't necessarily talk about in what manner autism might have been in a link, or they don't get experts to talk about how autism can affect violence, but rather instead just leave it hanging there as he was violent and he was autistic, as if it should be self-evident why these two facts are connected. And that creates a pretty harmful environment for those of us on the spectrum to be out there talking with people who don't know.
And that's a good point. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, the question I'm going to have, and I'll ask it right now, or the comment, there's really two aspects to this. There's the media, and you said about fear, but it's also society as a group never understanding the facts. It happens in politics too, and just listening to their favorite media person and assume what they say is true. Fear-based, let's talk about that when we come back. This is Understanding Autism. We'll be right back. And welcome back again. You're listening to Understanding Autism, a special edition today, Tuesday from 2 to 3, and then a second part of Understanding Autism from 3 to 4 right after this particular show. We're talking about autism and violence, and we've talked about sort of misunderstanding by the media in terms of using the label autism a little bit too liberally, I guess you could say, and not really doing their job as hosts or reporters to really understand a little bit. That's why the show is on there, Understanding Autism. The question I had, which is I think maybe as serious perhaps and even more, is that society as a whole seems to just be sort of like sheep at times, where they just hear something and they, you know, if it's their favorite station, their favorite host, their favorite reporter, they probably believe it without investigating. And that's where problems come in, That's where prejudice come in, racism comes in, a whole assortment of things against a certain group. I don't think it's fair, Paul.
Well, one of the big things you have with autism, and this is true for many mental disabilities, is that, you know, it's often easier and sometimes better, depending on how challenged someone is, that they're in a different class if you have a mental disability, that you are separated from the other students and in a classroom where you can have whatever your challenges are adapted to so that you can get the same kind of education that other people get. The problem, though, is that neurotypical students also often aren't exposed to people on the spectrum, people with other disabilities, people who are struggling in one way or another. And so you don't have a lot of early education, because we know that, you know, kids who play with kids of other skin colors, they tend to get along with them better later in life and so on. And having them introduced to the idea that people with autism, people with these other disabilities are basically just normal people is going to be greatly beneficial. But instead, people don't learn about autism until their 20s or 30s. They don't even hear it other than maybe the word occasionally. And so the most trustworthy source they have about it is the news, and they don't have time to go and educate themselves. So a big part of it is this push to raise awareness and raise exposure to it and interaction with it. And part of that's also going to depend on people with autism coming out and saying, hey, you know, guys around the office, guess what? I was diagnosed with autism a few years back, you know, whatever. But things like these news reports make that harder to do, because then you have parents who are maybe afraid to have their child going to school or in a class or hanging out with a kid who has autism because they're afraid that the child might do something violent. You have, you know, people who are diagnosed who are uncertain if they want to tell people about it because of the fear that might invoke or whatever. There's the challenge that when you do tell people you have autism, you're afraid they'll treat you differently. Maybe they will treat you like you're not as intelligent or have other deficits that aren't really associated with it. So part of it is that this message in the news about autism and only presenting it as a bad thing when, I mean, yeah, it presents challenges, but it's not the kind of bad thing that the news presents it as, is really sort of a recurring danger out there for people in the autism community.
Do you think the media knows about this? I mean, what do both of you, have you read any articles? Is there a push by some of the autism organizations to get the word out, specifically maybe targeting the media and say, hey, we just heard you say this. I think I heard Bill O'Reilly say something like this on, it could have been, maybe the what is it, the Sandy Hook?
Newtown without a house that we were talking about.
And I think Bill O'Reilly, it was either that or something else where he mentioned the word autism within his report, and I'm thinking, I mean, it's just irresponsible, is my opinion.
Well, as far as I know, when those things have happened, some of the major organizations on their social media, they will comment on it and provide some clarification. As far as them directly contacting, you know, larger media, I don't have a way of knowing that.
But the big thing is you cannot depend on the news to do your job for you, because, I mean, millions of things happen every single day. Billions of things happen. There are, you know, billions of people, and all of them are doing things. And so they have to filter out what's newsworthy. And typically what's newsworthy is what people will remember, what people will actually flip to their channel to watch, what will keep people through commercial breaks so they can make their money. And the problem with that is that that makes news sensationalist by necessity. You can't really blame it, because we, the viewing audience, are who make it that way, you know, that we would stop watching if it were less interesting. So it's hard to feel upset with the news for me, because I know that, you know, it's sort of a reality that they have to do it the way they do. And so as long as there aren't positive stories about autism out there, they aren't going to be telling them. If you had someone who was, say, in the House of Representatives or the Senate who came out and said, hey, guess what, I'm diagnosed with autism, or if you had a candidate running for one of those who actually had a reasonable chance of getting elected, that would be news, and that would provide people with a positive view of autism. We've recently had Daryl Hannah talking about being diagnosed with autism, things like that. That's sort of what we need to counterbalance the fears of violence, is positive autistic role models, to sort of give the news an opportunity to show the other side in a way that's newsworthy. And so, I mean, I mentioned to you that I was on a local TV channel talking about it briefly. And so the news does take interest in it briefly, but the viewers probably don't. That, you know, when I came on there, they probably tuned out for 3 seconds and came back for the next segment where well, actually, with the segment before, they had a one-year-old dancing with professional dancers doing backup dancing and mimicking the child's moves. That, you know, when that's on your news and that's what's interesting and keeps people there, when you've got someone seriously talking about the nature of violence and you know, how damaging it is to a group of people that they sort of get lumped in as being part of this violence, you know, that's when you go and get more chips.
So it really goes back then, is there, and I'll just throw this out here and we can comment briefly or in depth, is there a problem in society? Is society creating, or the media or the internet creating a bunch of people that live in a community, a society, that just can't think for themselves, that are based on fear? I see it in politics, and I think we all see it in politics. It's not a political show, but I see that quite often. There's news is not like it used to be. They're spinning. They're trying to create maybe new sensationalism for advertising, and that's our lullaby for today. No, I don't think
so. On that topic of you know, the media and everything, we know that there are so much more information sources available now than there were, say, 100 years ago. That in the recent past, you had to go out and seek information. And then we shifted to, you know, in the far past, you had newspapers. Before that, you had broadsheets, and maybe you had a town crier or something, and then you had no information whatsoever. So we've moved very quickly from moderate amounts of information to extreme amounts of information, where you have the internet, where you can find out anything you could possibly want to know. You have TV news, you have whatever, that we're now at a part where the problem isn't necessarily that people are uninformed, so much as they don't know which things to pay attention to. There's so much information coming in at them that when one person is saying autism is safe and another person is saying autism is dangerous and another person is saying autism isn't even real, who do you listen to? Who do you believe? And so, you know, the news media, they try to be curators. I mean, that's their job. Their job is to curate information and tell you this is information worth listening to right now. And the fact of the matter is that it is worth listening to the question of whether or not that person had autism, because that is a fact of the case. But they don't do a good job of talking about why that's important and whether we should be disregarding it, because they aren't experts in autism. And there isn't time for experts in autism. And, you know, so it's one of those things where we've hit the point where we have more information coming in than we can process in a day. And we haven't really yet learned how to deal with it ourselves. So I don't think it's necessarily a societal problem of, well, people just don't really care, so much as a problem of we are moving faster than we can adapt to, and we need to keep catching up.
Probably not care, but probably might be a sign of maybe just, I was going to say laziness, but maybe it's not even laziness. I think it's just an attitude that people have, is that they just sort of believe what they hear without investigating. That might be.
You have to for a lot of things, and that's part of the issue, is that there's so much information out there that if you took the time to question and investigate all of it, you would be a week behind on the first day, and you'd be a month behind on the first week, and you'd be a lifetime behind by the end of your next year. It just would be impossible for you to investigate, and that's why we have to depend on these curators. And part of that is that those of us who are doing autism advocacy have to create channels of getting information to people, going to the news things and saying, hey, you just ran an article on this. Would you mind giving us time to defend autism?
Yeah.
Or creating our own things? You know, there's papers published and everything else. So it's really an issue of seizing the message yourself.
Well, I agree with that. I think shows like this and other shows should step up and challenge perhaps certain news media that go ahead and say things that are not maybe accurate. And, you know, maybe they would take notice or maybe they wouldn't. It just depends. But still, in a society, an attitude is, it's a thought process. People can learn to suspend their judgment. What I'm saying is that most people in society, they don't even stop and think and say, is that true? They go, oh, it's probably true. But they could ask the question, is it true, not have a judgment. Maybe they'll investigate it, but at least they'll be neutral. I mean, that's a possibility, and I don't see many people doing that in society. All right, what's your opinion?
Why don't we take a short break, and when we come back, we'll, you know, continue talking about autism and violence. I know we have still have some things regarding culture and society, and also, you know, just again talking a little bit more about maybe looking at this closer and understanding autism versus some of the co-occurring conditions that could be contributing to these sorts of violent crimes.
Okay, and we will be right back after. And welcome back again. You are listening to Understanding Autism. We are here live, Regis East in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac alongside Kimberly Isaac Emery and Paul Alden all the way from Houston, Texas. We're talking about autism and violence. And if you want to hear a replay of the show, go to breakradioshow.com under Archives, Understanding Autism, and you can hear if you just joined us right now. Kimberly, we were talking about on the break another aspect to this culture, you know, and the culture of how it might give rise to violence. Why don't we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, Paul has a lot of thoughts on that area in terms of when we were he and I were talking about Elliot Rodgers and, you know, just kind of sharing with each other some of our thoughts. And Paul has a lot of interesting views from his, you know, perspective on culture. And I kind of come in more on the clinical side, so I'll let him share the culture thought.
Well, I mean, one big thing about Elliot Rodger that we saw is that he gave us a wealth of information about his worldview. He posted a video the night before going on his spree. He wrote,
and that was in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
the most recent.
He wrote a, I think it's a 140-page manifesto that was his life story as he remembered it, talking about the struggles he had. And both in this video and in his writing, you can see a lot of things that when reading it, if you've been around a lot of people on the spectrum, you go, this doesn't sound like the people I know, because he has a lot of talk about sort of his own emotional responses to things and his interpreting the world through his feelings and in ways that you typically don't hear things described by people on the autism spectrum. But what we did also see is that he had an incredibly harmful and dehumanizing view of women, that he didn't see them even as people in their own right. And this is where a lot of violence springs from, that it's incredibly difficult to commit violence to someone that you see as a person. This is why the way we train our soldiers is in learning how not to think of their opponents as people while they're fighting, but trying to make sure that in that process we don't wear down their empathy too much. And that's why we have such a struggle with soldiers and keeping them, you know, within this careful range of being able to do their job but not being scary. And this is something we saw in the Stanford prison experiment where the teacher took a group of students and split them into prisoners and prison guards, and the prison guards became extremely abusive, like actually abusive towards the prisoner students, because they kept using dehumanizing language. And this experiment had to be called off because it went overboard. And these were all mentally sound, healthy people who, when exposed to a culture that reinforced this idea that these prisoners, they aren't people, they aren't human, they aren't worth treating decently, this exposure and this cultural thing turned them into monsters and then brought them back from being monsters when the experiment was ended and everyone said, well, what happened to us? And so we know that you don't have to be diagnosably mentally ill to do horrible, horrible things. Instead, what you have to do is have a situation that erodes your empathy towards a group of people to the point where you no longer see them as people.
Or, you know, what is interesting as you're talking about that, when you said the Stanford experiment where, you know, there was prisoners and prison guards, so everyone had a role, an identity in essence. And that's a very deep psychological aspect that drives behavior, even beyond beliefs and values often. If you think you are in a role and that is what's expected of you, you could act that out, and that's what
you're really saying.
That's
what cultural forces do, is
yeah.
they put people in these positions. And so that's what we saw with Elliot Rodgers. He got involved in this men's rights movement, which it sounds like a reasonable name, but it's sort of one of those, the name really basically just means that that they don't have any respect, that feminism is going too far, that basically they need to fight back, and they need to fight back in overwhelming force. And so it's sort of this group of people who are really strongly negative about the agency of women and women being treated as people. And so he was very deeply involved in this community, and to the point, and this community is so terrifying in terms of their beliefs and everything, that after he went on his shooting, there were a significant number of postings and web pages on the internet celebrating what he did. That, you know, when you want to talk about autism being a factor here, we really should be talking about these other people and this culture that he was in. And to be fair, autism can lead to isolation. Autism often leads to isolation because you aren't getting along with people around you. And when you're isolated, you can have, weaknesses exposed that allow people with communities like this, harmful people, to take advantage of you. And so if autism was a factor in it, then it's possible it made it easier for these people to take advantage of him. But we also know that people in this community often commit crimes against women, not necessarily on this scale, but it happens very often that crimes are committed against women, and you find that they have been members of these sorts of communities, that they have this kind of information on their computer or whatever, that it's one of those things where autism didn't cause this. These people and this society caused it. And whether or not autism made him more susceptible to it, that's a question worth asking. And that's something that the news media should have been asking, is if he was on the spectrum, did it make him, you know, more likely to get involved with this because he wasn't receiving the help he needed? But saying, did autism create a violent person? No. What created a violent person was hundreds of people telling him that it's okay to do violence against women, and in fact it's admirable to do violence against women, to teach them a lesson and express yourself as an alpha male.
And that would be worth a study in itself, to see person as attracted. I shouldn't say what type of person, but what are some of the elements that someone would be attracted to a group like that and support, like you said, some bizarre actions, very violent actions. But more importantly is that the first things that came to mind when you described this group, and I haven't heard that before, it's really interesting, is that these men that would join that somehow, I mean, if you trace it back, somehow they had to be burned or hurt by women, maybe their mom or something like that. They sound like victims, first of all, right?
Well, it really sort of depends, because there's no single profile for someone in these groups, and that's part of the issue, is that, you know, you have people who maybe they have a friend who has those thoughts, and that friend keeps telling it to them, and they're a close friend, and so it starts to sink in, and then they sort of ease into it. Or you have someone who just gets exposed to it while they're young, and because we know that the vast majority of your cultural influence basically just comes from what you're exposed to enough. It's not necessarily whether you're predisposed to believe it or not, but what you're surrounded by.
Sort of model.
Exactly. It's what's modeled for you. And, you know, judging from a lot of his manifesto, it wasn't necessarily modeled for him in terms of what he was surrounded by, but sort of, in his case, what we express through culture, and this is something that I'll be talking about at a conference later this year, is that he saw a lot of, like, if the guy is persistent, he gets the girl, that, you know, every guy who's nice and sweet is due a girlfriend, that it's sort of expected that you will have one. From all, you know, in movies, there's always, you know, the one guy meets the one girl, and eventually he keeps pursuing her until she agrees to get with him, and then it works. That there's a very simplistic view of relationships, and he felt burned by the fact that the real world is more complex than what was presented to him in the media, and that gave to get their message to him. But the thing is none of this has anything to do with autism, and if you insert autism into it or remove it, it doesn't change the fact that he would have been a severely toxic individual to those around him. But if you took him out of that community and he was never exposed to it, this wouldn't have happened. That it's very much an issue of culture in this crime. And so autism here, it just really isn't the causative factor that the news sort of tried to present it as in many cases.
Has any of the media looking into this group? I mean, that would be a...
It's been covered. It's one of those things where it hasn't been covered deeply by a lot of the main sources, but it is mentioned. And I would say it's actually mentioned more than the issue of autism, but it's a case of they don't really talk about it as a causal factor so much as whatever sent him wrong led him into this group,
gotcha.
Rather than this group is what led him to the crime. And so it's one of those discussions where when we're talking about mental illness and such, we also need to talk about, you know, what else is going on culturally. You know, historically speaking, autism, there has been research into whether autism leads to violence. That, you know, back in the 80s, there was a study I read about by Simon Baron Cohen, who's a pretty well-known autism researcher. But what he looked into wasn't whether or not autism caused violence, but in this case where you had an autistic individual who was violent regularly towards his girlfriend, how that autism interacted with that violence. So it wasn't necessarily whether the autism caused him to be violent, but whether the autism gave him inspiration in the ways he was violent. But more recently, I think it was 2005 in Sweden, there was a study that looked at over 400 autistic individuals and found that there wasn't a correlation they could determine between autism and violence. That autism, there wasn't any solid correlation as to autism being a causal influence on violence. That the community there was not any more violent than neurotypical people, except in cases where they had other conditions. Because autism does come with things quite often, other mental conditions. And in those cases where they had a mental condition known to cause violence, they were violent. But in that case, you had a very clear cause that wasn't the autism.
So I guess the next step, and then we'll take a quick break, is that, to me, I mean, just really making it and boiling it down to its simplest component, violence in itself. I mean, don't take any groups. But violence in itself, isn't that a result of extreme anger?
Not necessarily extreme anger, so much as the ability to view someone as not a person. Because when they aren't a person, it's no longer violence from your perspective. That they no longer have feelings. They no longer matter to the point where whatever you're doing to them, I mean, it's not violence to roll up an old newspaper and throw it away. And it's not violence to discard of a person if you're no longer seeing them as a person. So the root cause of a lot of violence is conditioning, either culturally or through a mental disorder that allows you to remove the personhood of another person.
That's interesting. Why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. This is Understanding Audience live from Regis East in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be right back.